Morning, everyone. Hope you've had a chance to warm up. I wouldn't have minded if we'd had some worship dancing. You know, it gives you a chance to exercise and jump around a little bit. It would have been quite appropriate today, wouldn't it? I think we probably all remember those famous words that David said in the Psalms. He said, "I'll praise you, Lord, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made." And we are. And the more medicine progresses, the more we find that's very true. But we do have certain abilities and resources that God has given us as human beings that we tend to use every day, and we tend to perhaps take them for granted. But I want to just pause for a moment just to think of some of those resources that we have, which are really quite amazing. The fact that we can stand up on our feet, perpendicular. You know, most animals are down there on fours. Of course, the birds are up there winging their way. But we are standing up on feet. This gift of balance, which we don't give a second thought to. And it's always there, automatically. Balance. You don't have to think about it. It's there. It's a given. You walk around. You can run. You can walk. It's there. Balance in our legs and our feet. What about our hands? These amazing tools, these amazing resources that we have, with which we can do so much. We can make things, we can make contact with people. Very varied power and resource that we have with our hands, which again are an amazing ability. Perhaps the human mind is the greatest, the most astonishing ability that we have. The ability to plan, the ability to design, to imagine, to remember, to dream, to think, to analyze, all in the mind. So much there, but people don't understand how the mind works, how the brain works. And finally, that other ability to convey what's in our mind, in our thoughts, by speaking, by speech. The power of speech, whether it's spoken or written, something we take for granted, something we're using every day, using language. In Proverbs, it makes quite an interesting, quite a staggering statement about speech in Proverbs 18 and verse 21. 18 and verse 21, reading from the NIV. Verse 21. In the NIV, it says, "The tongue has the power of life and death, and those who love it will eat its fruit." The tongue has the power of life and death. That's quite a claim to make, isn't it? That makes you stop and think. I mean, the tongue, something we use every day, we take for granted. But can this really have the power of life or death? Is this just an exaggeration, a metaphor, a poetic statement? Or is it literally, in a sense, true? If so, it's something to think about, isn't it? How we use it. We've all heard of the saying, the pen is mightier than the sword. And that's true when it comes to the written word. The pen is mightier than the sword. What has been written down in books, what's written down and conveyed in writing, is more effective, more powerful at achieving things, making changes, changing lives, making progress, than the sword, what war will do. War is destructive. It doesn't make much, it doesn't achieve much in the way of improvement. Unfortunately, it just causes a lot of misery. So in that sense, the pen, the written word, is mightier than the sword. And of course, in this age, we don't use pens so much anymore. It's all electronic media, it's digital. And in a sense, that's taken over from the pen, the digital media that we have. And is this good or not good? Is this a power for good or a power for not so good? Well, we have yet to see. What about the tongue? The tongue, of course, is the spoken word. And that's what we're focusing on this morning. The tongue has the power of life and death. We tend to take it for granted. We forget it. We just use it. Well, we've had examples recently of both the written and the spoken word. What about Mr. Trump and his speech on Jerusalem. He's well known for his use of Twitter and his controversial remarks on Twitter. So there you have the written word. And what he says, he deliberately tries to be controversial. And that angers many people. It causes conflict, division. And yet he does it to be controversial, to be in the news. What about his recent speech on Jerusalem? There was the spoken word as well as the written word. And that was a very dangerous thing to say, wasn't it? A lot of commentators said to actually recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, that's almost throwing petrol on the fire. That's a controversial thing to say. And to me, that's an example of possibly the power of almost death in what you say, because that could have created a really dangerous situation in the Middle East. So far it hasn't. There have been some ructions, some immediate repercussions from that, but thankfully it hasn't just blown up, but it could have done. And it doesn't take much by someone in power to stand up and say that, and it could create a bonfire. What about another individual whom we all know about? A gentleman called Kim Jong-un. What power does he have in what he says? He has the power to send rockets into the air, doesn't he? Rockets that could not only reach Japan, but the US mainland. His power, the power of his word, whether the word of command literally spoken or the written word, he could create war, couldn't he? He could destroy, he could kill millions. He has that power of death. And in the meantime, when he's trading insults with Mr. Trump, again, that's not a pretty experience. It doesn't sound like the word of peace. And so those two men and other powerful men have this power. And often, I'm afraid these days, the power isn't used for good, or it doesn't look like it, doesn't feel like it. It's a worrying way of doing things. And we live in a world today where so often what we come across, what we hear every day is anger, conflict, division, hatred, prejudice. And those all those things tend to lead to conflict and ultimately could lead to death. And so we're seeing more examples, I think, today of the tongue having the power of death rather than the power of life. It's easier to see that. It's easier to recognize that as being true in the age in which we live. What about at the individual level? What about individual human beings and the way we use our tongues? I'd like to go back into Proverbs again, but this time from the New Living Translation. The New Living Translation, Proverbs 13. Proverbs 13, verse 3. Proverbs 13 in verse 3. And it says, "Those who control their tongue will have a long life. Opening your mouth can ruin everything." So sometimes the absence of speech is better than speech itself. So wise words of truth and reality. What about Proverbs 29? Proverbs 29, again from the New Living Translation. Proverbs 29 and verse 20. Verse 20, Proverbs 29. "There is more hope for a fool than for someone who speaks without thinking." So this is more the negative side, I'm afraid, but it just is a warning to us. And of course, there is a well-known writer in the New Testament who had a lot of respect for the book of Proverbs. His name is James. And in chapter 1 of James, again in the New Living Translation, James chapter 1 and verse 26, similar warning. James chapter 1 and verse 26. "If you claim to be religious but don't control your tongue, you're fooling yourself and your religion is worthless." That's quite blunt, isn't it? If you don't control your tongue, you're fooling yourself. Your religion is worthless. And so there are many warnings there that the tongue can get us into all sorts of trouble. And you can read that in James chapter 3 as well. I won't take time for that today. But the other side of the picture, the tongue has the power of life. It's easy to look around and see examples of where the tongue has the power of death, and where we as human beings say the wrong thing at the wrong time. But what about the power of life?
That's what I'd like to look at this morning. It's a bit more positive. But it also tends to be unseen, unhidden, hidden rather, unrecognized. Where can we see examples of the tongue having the power of life? Well, I thought about this and I thought, from my mind, the readiest example would be maybe of a mother with her baby, her new baby. Can you just imagine? She's there with the baby. She's focusing on her new baby, full of joy, appreciation for this treasure that she has, speaking to her little one, communicating with this person. And the baby's listening, absorbed, listening to his mother or her mother. And the mom is just speaking to the baby, showing love, showing encouragement and support. You can almost imagine the words. Breathing life, almost speaking life into that young one. And that baby begins to grow and learn about life, and learn about his or her parents by the words that he or she is hearing from his or her mum. Mum speaking literally the words of life. Words of life, words of encouragement, words of support, words of appreciation, words that she's there for her, words of life. Dads can do it as well sometimes. Maybe sometimes they're not so good at it. They may be awestruck by this wonderful new creature that they've got. But we get round to it as well, a little bit. Words of life. And of course, as they grow up, as they grow older, we're there for them, we're there encouraging them, we're supporting them with our words. And it's our words that have that big effect, that big influence. And hopefully they are words of life, which shape, which help, which guide our children, which tell them how much we care, which tell them, impart a little bit of wisdom, a little bit of guidance, which are there for them with words of sympathy when things go wrong, to support them and help them. And then, of course, there's a stage at which things get a bit difficult, when they're no longer children but not yet adults, and they're between ages, teenagers in between. And there it's not quite so easy to impart words of life, and sometimes there can be discussion and debate, and the older they get, the more they're becoming independent. And we still want to impart words of life as parents, but perhaps not quite such a readiness to hear, more a readiness to question. But that is the example, the first example that we can see at home in all our families, words of life. Hopefully words of life are there always in our homes to one another. Of course, it's not just in the human family, it's also in our spiritual family, it's also at work, it's in our shops, it's on the bus, it's in the street. Wherever we are meet with people, there's an opportunity to express words of life. We never think of it that way, perhaps. We never think that we're imparting life into people. That sounds almost dramatic, almost overstating it, but there is a truth there. We've just read it in Proverbs 18. Words of life. How does that happen? Well, let's go into Proverbs again and take another example. Proverbs 12 this time. Proverbs 12 and verse 25. Verse 25. Again, in the New Living Translation, it says, "Worry weighs a person down. An encouraging word cheers a person up." Can make a big difference, can't it? An encouraging word can change things, can cheer someone up, can lift them, can make a big difference. And yes, it's good to do that. It's not always easy, however. Sometimes it takes quite a bit of skill to be able to encourage people. If you take an example in 2 Timothy, and again I'm saying in the New Living Translation, 2 Timothy, and again just focusing on verse 24. Verse 24 of 2 Timothy chapter 2. Chapter 2, verse 24. That's it. It says, "A servant of the Lord must not quarrel, but must be kind to everyone, able to teach, patient with difficult people." That's the reality, folks. That's the reality. It's nice to think that we can be kind, that we can be encouraging, But sometimes the reality is we've got to be kind to everyone without partiality. And we've got to be able to be patient with difficult people. Be patient to be able to make a difference. This can be challenging. And I want to just begin by looking at some of the examples where it can be difficult. Because I think, rather than just saying, well, this is easy, let's go and do it, I want to start by saying, well, there are times when it's not at all easy to impart these words of life, to use our tongues effectively, skillfully. It's not at all easy. When people are bearing a burden, you know what it says in Galatians 6. Sorry, I'm just picking out individual verses here, but they are very appropriate. Galatians chapter 6 and verse 2, a famous verse. The end of Galatians chapter 6 and verse 2, addressed to the church. It says, "Bear or carry each other's burdens, and in this way you fulfill the law of Christ." So part of our responsibility is to learn to bear one another's burdens. Yes, in the church, but not just in church. Other people too, out there in the world, bear one another's burdens. It's something that we do when we are showing God's love, as we sang about. One way we show God's love is to bear one another's burdens. And some burdens are pretty heavy that people have. The most acute cases are people who suffer the bereavement, a recent bereavement of a close family member, or a severe illness, a loss of job. There are burdens of that sort that are pretty heavy, that are pretty heavy. And it's hard to know, quite candidly, how to encourage a person in that situation. It is not easy. And yet it's through our words that we can do that. There's another kind of burden. There are people who may feel that they've suffered some kind of grievance, that they've been badly treated, oppressed, exploited, cheated, deceived. And as a result, they have a lot of anger, a lot of emotion, a lot of hurt. How do we help people like that? Sometimes they react as though they don't want to be helped. How do we encourage people like that? Well, let's go to James again, James chapter 3. James chapter 3. Here's a point to bear in mind to start with, just setting the scene as it were. James chapter 3. I'm reading this again from the New Living Translation. James chapter 3 and verse 1. There are two points here that I just want to bring out. James chapter 3 and verse 1. "Dear brothers and sisters, not many of you should become teachers in the church, for we who teach will be judged more strictly." Something that makes me worried from time to time. Verse 2. "Indeed, we all make many mistakes." Praise God for reality and for truth. We all make many mistakes. "For if we could control our tongues, we would be perfect and could also control ourselves in every other way." James makes the point, the reality, that if you can control your tongue to that extent, you've almost reached perfection. But the other point I make is not so much teaching in church, but there's another point here, and that is that sometimes when people are in trouble, we are tempted to want to help them by giving advice. Giving advice, that's a form of teaching, isn't it? So when it's one-on-one and someone's bearing a burden, sometimes our immediate reaction is to give advice, to teach. And my suggestion is to hold back on that, especially in the most difficult cases where someone is really angry or really hurt in some way, where they're bearing a heavy burden. Hold back on the advice. Why do I say that? Well, if you have the time to read the book of Job, you will understand. Because Job had the most catastrophic experiences. We know what he went through. He lost everything. He went through the most terrible experiences, the most terrible illness. There's a crisis for you. It's almost a cliche in its own right, what Job went through, the trials that he had. And one of his trials, which he didn't expect, was the words of encouragement that he had from his friends. His friends came along and they were there ostensibly to encourage him, to use words of life. But what did they do? Essentially, they were saying, well, Job, this is all your fault. You got yourself into this mess. Here's what you did wrong. Now, I know I'm paraphrasing, but essentially, that's what it came down to. They thought they knew the answer. They could just give the advice, and that would solve the problem. And what did Job think of that? How did that help him? Did it help, or did it make it worse? Turn to the book of Job for a moment in the New International Version. Book of Job, chapter 16. Chapter 16 and verse 1. We won't read all the debate or all the discussion. It goes on for many pages. But let's look at Job's reaction here to one of his friends. And he says in chapter 16, verse 1, then Job replied, I've heard many things like these. Miserable comforters are you all. Fat lot of good you lot are. Miserable comforters are you all. Will your long-winded speeches never end? What ails you that you keep on arguing? And so on. Though he didn't appreciate their comfort, their advice at all. In fact, it seems to make things worse. And so I think there's a salutary lesson for us in thinking how to use words of life. What words of life can we find someone who is in great difficulty of one sort or another? That's not easy. It is not easy. And Job's example and his friend's example is a timely warning to hold back, I think, on the advice. So what is it that people really need? What they really need is sympathy, understanding, support. Let's have a look at 1 Peter. 1 Peter chapter 3. 1 Peter chapter 3. And again, just dropping down to verse 8. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 8, NIV. It says, finally, all of you, doesn't leave anyone else out. Finally, all of you, live in harmony with one another. Be sympathetic. Love as brothers. Be compassionate and humble. That's pretty clear. Pretty clear. Be compassionate and humble. Be sympathetic. That's what people need. That's what they need. They need sympathy, understanding, compassion, and humility. Another section which has a similar message is Romans 12. Romans 12 and verse 17. Romans 12 verse 17. NIV says, do not repay anyone evil for evil. But you can expand that a bit. You can build it up. Supposing someone's angry, supposing someone is shouting and swearing at you, the very simple application of this principle is you don't shout back and you don't lose your temper. You don't respond in like manner. Don't respond, don't repay evil with evil. Be careful to do what's right in the eyes of everybody. If it's possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. And so our responsibility in those circumstances, at least part of it anyway, is to bring about peace and to help the person concerned to find peace in the midst of their personal conflict, to help them in that way. So I've begun by looking at perhaps some of the worst case scenarios, simply to underline the fact that speaking words of life isn't always that easy or that automatic. It's not at all easy. It can be challenging, and the reality is we need God's Spirit. We need the Holy Spirit to guide us, because through God's Spirit we have the fruits of the Spirit, especially love. Love with all that it can do. Kindness, compassion, understanding, empathy, patience, humility. All those qualities which we need, really, as human beings. We are just not equal to those challenges. We need that power from God to help us. Well, having said that sometimes we need to be slow to give advice, I'm going to contradict that and start by giving some advice myself. And so, how do you actually convey words of life? What do you do? Have I got some examples, some tips, some thoughts, some ideas? Yes, I've got a few here, and I hope these may help you just focus a little bit on the situations where we can give words of life, where we can help without necessarily giving a lot of advice. I've got four tips, four ideas here which might give you something to work on. I'm sure there's many others you could think of, but let's take these as a start. Practical ways of making a difference in what we say. The first point, to register, beginning at the beginning, is an important point. Little things mean a lot. You'd be surprised at what a big impact a little thing and a few words can actually have. You would be surprised if you knew. Little things can mean a lot. And so I'm going to begin with what we often regard as a little thing, and that is politeness. Politeness. I know it's going out of fashion these days, but it's not just a social custom. Being polite to people shows respect to them. It shows respect. It shows that you honour them, you appreciate them as human beings, as people. You're not just there to barge in and shove your way through. To say please, thank you, excuse me. So simple, so small. And yet sometimes we don't do it. If I were to make a generalisation, I would say that perhaps amongst the elderly people there is more regard for the civilities, for saying please and thank you and so on, or excuse me. Whereas younger people are too busy, too much of a hurry, and don't value so much those things. It's a generality. Generalities can be dangerous. But it's important to do it, because it shows something. It shows respect, it shows kindness. When we're travelling often in a busy city like this, the crowded buses, the crowded trains, the crowded pavements, the crowded shops, we get impatient when you're waiting in a queue, when you're waiting to get on the bus or off the bus. And sometimes people barge in, they jump ahead, and you get impatient. And so sometimes we have to wait. Sometimes we let people go through after you. Or perhaps if you want off the bus or off the train, you have to say, excuse me, you know what it's like travelling on the tube in the rush hour, and this is your stop, and you have to sort of squeeze your way through crowds of people to get off. And so it's good to say, excuse me. At times when I'm on the bus and I may be sitting on the window seat and it's my stop, but there's someone sitting right beside me on the corridor side. So I like to turn to that person and say, excuse me, please. That means I need to get out. They need to let me out of that seat. It's a very simple gesture, but it's showing politeness. It's showing respect for them as an individual. I'm just asking if they wouldn't mind, could I come past, please? I don't always get the same treatment in return when the situation is reversed. When I'm in the corridor seat and they're in the window seat and they want out, sometimes they just look and I'm supposed to understand what that's for. And I'll think, did they ever know that they have a tongue? Did they ever learn English? Do they know the words, excuse me? Anyway, one has to use mercy and say, well, I'm a mind reader. I think you want to get out. So forgive me. I don't want to be overburdening with that. But it's just a little thing. But it just oils the wheels of progress and relationships. It shows respect, kindness, doesn't it? What about thank you? Thank you is an important thing to say. Sometimes we just say it mechanically. Oh, thank you. But it's better, especially if there's something special, to say thank you in a way that is sincere, that is genuine, that is heartfelt, that actually shows appreciation. So there we are. You can start small and you can start with being polite. Moving on to appreciation in general. Appreciation goes beyond just saying thank you. Appreciation in the broader sense can mean appreciating something that someone has done, an achievement. It may mean a compliment. It may mean recognizing something that someone has done well. And it makes a big difference. The trouble is, and I do it as well, that as human beings we tend to take for granted all the good things, the nice things that people do, and say, well, that's fine. And it's only when they do something you don't like, or something wrong, then you notice it. You say, you didn't do that, or you did that wrong. So we're very good at pointing out the problems, the difficulties, the failures, but we're not so good at pointing out the things they did well. And it should be the other way around. It should be the other way around. Any achievement is important. Now we know as parents to do this with our children when they're young, because they need the encouragement. They need to be told, that was good, well done, the smallest thing. But we tend to lose that when they get older. And we tend to forget and think, well, it's just for my children. I don't need to do it for the next door neighbour or the man in the street or anything like that. But just a small achievement, not flattery, but learning to appreciate that someone has done something well. Whether they went out of their way to do it, doesn't matter. They've done something well. And to recognise that and to spell it out and say it with words makes a difference. It was years ago that Dale Carnegie wrote his book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. You probably haven't read the book. You may have heard of it. It's on my bookshelf. I've read it years ago. And I turned back to it recently. How to Win Friends and Influence People. His very second chapter is about appreciation. And in that chapter, he quotes an American philosopher of years ago called William James. And William James once said, the deepest principle in human nature is the craving to be appreciated. Now, is that wrong, that we want to be appreciated? No, I don't think so. As human beings, we all want to know that we are valued, that what we've said or done is appreciated, is recognized, because we need that. We want to feel that we are making a good contribution, that what we've done is worthwhile. And so when we recognize what people are doing, when we put ourselves in their shoes and recognize that they have done something well, however small, and show that appreciation, we are speaking words of life. Speaking words of life. Point number three. It's also small, it's also simple. When we're using our tongues, we have to be real. To be authentic. What do I mean by that? Being authentic, being real. Well, there was one thing that Jesus didn't like. He did not like hypocrisy. And he often castigated the religious leaders of the day for their hypocrisy, their double standards. On the other hand, sinners, people who obviously were falling down, had all sorts of problems, he was there to help them because they didn't hide the fact, they recognized the fact. And so in being real, in being genuine in our words, it is helpful and is effective in our relationships with others to admit our mistakes and our faults. It doesn't have to be big. What we're doing is recognizing that we are human, that we make mistakes, that we're not the world's answer to everything. I want to just read what James said again, just to underline the point. James chapter 3. You have it in the NIV, but I'm going to read it again in the New Living Translation. James chapter 3. Because he makes an important point. James chapter 3 and verse 1. Dear brothers and sisters, not many of you should become teachers, for we who teach will be judged more strictly. Indeed, we all make many mistakes. It's good to recognize that and accept that. That's part of being human. To err is human. We all make mistakes. If you think of the example of Balaam's ass, poor old Balaam. He had this mammoth job to do, a mighty prophet, a message to deliver, a task to do. He was going to say the words. He was going to confront people. He was riding on his ass, wasn't he? But I think God had a sense of humor. He made the ass speak. He had a sense of humour. And the ass's job was to cut Balaam down to size and to show that he wasn't as big and important as he thought. And God was not going to speak to him through a mighty revelation or anything of that sort, but through his own donkey. His own donkey. And you have to laugh when you read the story. You have to say, God's got a sense of humour. And he was able to just bring this man down from his mighty self-opinion and show him his own donkey could put him on the straight and narrow and help him. It's a ridiculous situation. And often we are like that as human beings. Often we say things or we do things that are ridiculous. And it's good to learn to laugh at them. But not just to yourself, to laugh at other people. Do you know that I forgot to do so and so? If you're like me, your memory isn't perfect. You forget things. You've forgotten you should have done this. You've forgotten to bring that. You lose something. Memory isn't perfect. That's one thing we often forget. The other day, I burnt the toast completely. Have you ever done that? I had it put on in the toaster. And because, you know, you use different kinds of bread, you're never sure how long to put it on for. So you just put it on and hope for the best. And then I had to go away and do something else. That's often the case. You know, you're doing three things at once. And you go away, and then something else comes along. Oh, I've got to do that. And then I realized, I think I can smell burning. So I came downstairs. Oh, I'd left the toast on. And the kitchen was just full of smoke. And I learned something from that. That is that our fire alarm isn't working. Our fire alarm isn't working. Because it should have gone off. Now, the fire alarm isn't in the kitchen, to be fair. It's upstairs. But I opened the door, and there, the kitchen was full of smoke. And so there I was, flapping away, trying to get rid of all this smoke. And it's easily done, isn't it? You know, we make mistakes like that. We all get things wrong. It happens in the cooking. It happens in all sorts of situations. But it's good to be aware of that, and to share that, and to show that we are all human. And real, and to share that. It's human to boast, and often people tend to boast and try and build themselves up. These days, I think particularly amongst younger people, the habit of using Facebook to show off, look how great I am, look what I did here and there. Well, it looks fine in one sense, it's sharing, it's friendly, but what it also can do in the other sense is it can make other people feel bad. Because here's someone who shows how great they are, and I feel nothing by comparison. And so there is the sense that sometimes this medium, this Facebook, this use of it to show off, can have negative effects. Why not use it the other way around, to show that you make mistakes, to show, did you realize that I did so and so? I missed that opportunity. Oh, I missed the bus. You know, I don't see many examples of that happening on Facebook, do you? And yet, wouldn't that make a difference? Wouldn't that encourage us to think that, oh, we're all the same. We all make mistakes, you know. And this person is real. Instead of having negative peer pressure to somehow come up to these impossible standards that are unrealistic, we have genuine, realistic pressure, a recognition that we're real, that we're all, no one's perfect. We all make mistakes. I remember years ago, Mr. Jones made a rather pithy remark. He said, of certain people, they're so heavenly, they're no earthly good. I thought, that's a clever statement. They're so heavenly, they're no earthly good. And we've got to watch out that we don't slip into that category somehow. And we've got to be real, be earthly good, and use our tongue humbly, from time to time, with a sense of humour, to show that we are real, we do make mistakes, we're not perfect, we try, of course we do our best. But that's part of being authentic. And that, I would suggest, is also part of words of life. A sense of humour, sense of humility, and of being genuine, being real, and not ashamed to admit it from time to time, because that puts people at rest. It helps them feel better. It helps them feel that you're on their side. They know their failings, their difficulties, but for you to come alongside and admit that you have failings, you have problems, you're on their side. You're in the same arena. You're in the same wavelength. And so it does help to bring words of life. And the fourth area, the last area I just want to suggest this morning. Be thankful. Simple, isn't it? Small. Thankful. Be thankful. It just seems so much today that in the news and the media, everyone, whoever it is complaining, critical, fault-finding, can't have enough, nothing ever works. I wouldn't like to be a politician today, I wouldn't like to be a political leader, because there's so much mudslinging, there's so much criticism, everything's wrong, everything's breaking down, everything's failing. There's so many people who have needs that aren't being met. Everyone in a position of authority or leadership is an outsider, having much slung at them all of the time. I think Ecclesiastes has it right in words of truth, Ecclesiastes chapter 1. Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and verse 8. All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. We never have enough as human beings. And then over in chapter 5, a bit more specific, chapter 5 and verse 10. Whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income. This too is meaningless. As goods increase, so do those who consume them. And what benefit are they to the owner except to feast his eyes on them? We live in a society in the Western world where people never have enough. Doesn't matter what it is, they're never content. And I think sometimes the greatest blessing that a person could have would be contentment. Don't know if you've ever heard of lateral thinking. It's not such a common phrase these days, but lateral thinking is looking at something from a different point of view, even upside down or reversed. Lateral thinking. What about covetousness? Covetousness is mentioned throughout the Bible as a problem. And we live in a covetous society, a very materialistic society. What's the opposite of covetousness? Using lateral thinking. I would suggest that at least the opposite of covetousness is contentment. Contentment. And yet, contentment as a practice and as a gift and as an ability is a wonderful skill to be content. Paul showed that in the Philippians, he said, I have learned in whatsoever state I am to be content. He learned that. He had opportunities and he had the humility to admit that he had learned an important lesson. But beyond just contentment, I would go further and say, be thankful. Not just content, thankful. Thankful for what you have. Thankful for the things that God has given. When I started working many years ago, I began working in a social security office in northwest London. And from time to time I had to go around visiting people. Maybe there were queries about their benefits, benefit payments. And there were so many people who would complain. This isn't enough. How am I supposed to live on this? I well remember one young mother saying, how does the government expect me to live on this family allowance? This measly amount. And I had to bite my tongue. Because the answer is, it doesn't. You are the mother. You're supposed to support the child yourself, you know. Or if you have no resources, if you can't go to work, there are other benefits. The mere family allowance is never meant to be enough. On the other hand, of all the dozens, scores of people I visited, I remember one old lady, because she stood out as different from the rest. She said, you know, I'm so grateful for the pension that I have. Just a basic old age pension. It's not much, but it's good to have it. I do appreciate that. I'm so happy that I have that amount regularly to live on. I don't remember her exact words, but she was so different from everyone else in her attitude. It stood out, and I've never forgotten that. She didn't have a lot. She just had the basic pension. We all know the basic pension isn't wealth, is it? And those years ago it certainly wasn't very much. But she was grateful, genuinely grateful. She meant it. And I've never forgotten that. I thought, wow, that's a great attitude. That's a great attitude. To be thankful. To be thankful. Why am I mentioning this in relation to words of life, using your words? Simply this. We've heard the saying that iron sharpens iron. If we are thankful people, if we express our thankfulness, it will spill over. It will affect other people. And maybe they won't feel that they're so badly off after all. But if that person has learned to appreciate what they have, if that person has learned to enjoy what they have, to be grateful for it, to appreciate it in a genuine way, maybe I'm not so badly off myself after all. Being thankful can help other people to see that there's another way of looking at things. Often in other nations that are nowhere near as wealthy as we are, the ordinary man in the street has pretty much nothing, very little compared to what you and I have. And yet so often they're thankful. They don't complain, they're not arguing, they're not complaining, which is almost a national sport here in Britain. They're grateful, they're thankful. They get on with it. They are happy, happy even, to be thankful. And so it's good to practice thankfulness, I would suggest. But it's good for another reason. Good for another reason. And we sang about it earlier on. Because we're not just thankful for what life has given us. We're thankful for what God has given us. And for what God has done for us. For what God has done for us. And that's where thankfulness comes into its own. That's where thankfulness really comes into its own and makes a difference and has an impact. To be genuinely thankful for what God has done. Have a look at Psalm 71. Psalm 71. Psalm 71. David is showing thankfulness. Starting in verse 12. Verse 12. NIV. Verse 12. Be not far from me, O God. Come quickly, O my God, to help me. May my accusers perish in shame. May those who want to harm me be covered with scorn and disgrace. Yeah, there were times of problems, times when he had difficult people to deal with. Verse 14. But as for me, I shall always have hope. I will praise you more and more. My mouth will tell of your righteousness, of your salvation all day long, though I know not its measure. I will come and proclaim your mighty acts, O Sovereign Lord. I will proclaim your righteousness, yours alone. Since my youth, O God, you have taught me. And he appreciates that. God has taught him from his youth. How many of us appreciate that, recognize that, realize that God has helped us, steadied us, guided us from our youth? And to this day I declare your marvelous deeds, even when I'm old and grey, which will happen to us all one day, I'm afraid. Do not forsake me, O God, till I declare your power to the next generation, your might to all who are to come. Your righteousness reaches to the skies, O God. And if anyone knows that, we should, through experience, through knowing God's righteousness, God's kindness, his mercy, his love towards us. You who have done great things, who, O God, is like you? And to appreciate God and be thankful for him, as David is, spills over. And it's something that should be there in our conversation from time to time. Wherever we are, whoever we're speaking to, we start with a thankful attitude anyway, and then we easily move over into why we're thankful. Because God has provided for us. He's looked after us. His word has guided us, strengthened us, protected us. Who, O God, is like you? You have done great things. These are words of life. These are the words of life. When we're thankful to God for what he has done for us. I know it's not easy. I know perhaps it's not the kind of thing we would necessarily share with a stranger. Maybe we're a bit shy. But the thing is that if we're genuinely thankful, regularly thankful, and understand and recognize what God has done for us, it will spill over. It will spill out. We will share it. It will come from us. It will happen. It will happen. Let's just take an interesting analogy of that. Luke chapter 19. Luke chapter 19. I want to sort of draw a lesson from this. Luke chapter 19. When Jesus was about to make his special entry. Luke chapter 19. We probably don't remember the story, starting in verse 28. Jesus went on ahead, going up to Jerusalem. As he approached Bethphage and Bethany, he sent two of his disciples ahead to find a colt for him to sit on. And then down in verse 35, they brought it to Jesus, threw their cloaks on the colt, and put Jesus on it. As he went along, people spread their cloaks on the road. When he came near the place where the road goes down the Mount of Olives, the whole crowd of disciples began joyfully to praise God in loud voices for all the miracles they had seen. Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven and glory in the highest. Some of the Pharisees, of course, in the crowd said to Jesus, "Teacher, rebuke your disciples." "I tell you," he replied, "if they keep quiet, the stones will cry out." Really? What's the lesson for us? I would suggest the lesson for us is in 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 4. Verse 4 of 1 Peter chapter 2. "As you come to him, the living stone, rejected by men but chosen by God and precious to him, you also, like living stones, are being built into a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood." If Jesus said that the stones by the wayside would cry out, shouldn't we, as living stones, do the same? Shouldn't we be ready to do the same? Jesus said they won't help themselves. They will cry out. They will cry out. There was another time in the temple, I want to take time to read it, where there were children in the temple, and they cried out. They shouted praise to God in the temple. And Jesus reminded the Pharisees of the scripture which said, "Out of the mouths of babes and infants you have ordained praise." There are children singing God's praise at this time of the year. They get together, school children, they sing carols. This is an example. But we're also God's children too. We don't have to go around singing carols necessarily, but very welcome. But what about singing God's praises at other times of the year? What about showing our gratitude, honouring him, even shouting out as God's children? And so I began with Proverbs 18. Proverbs 18, which talked about life and death and the power of the tongue. And it's easy to dismiss that as being an exaggeration, as being just a metaphor. Life and death in the power of the tongue. Well, we can see that there's plenty of death around, plenty of destruction. The world we live in is in a mess because of the death in the power of the tongue. But we are called as living stones to be different and to use our tongues, our words, our communication for life, because the Bible says we have that power. In John chapter 6, we don't have time to turn there. At the end of that long chapter where Jesus talked about the bread and the wine, all his disciples, they couldn't stand it, so they left him. And Jesus turned round to his own disciples and said, "You're going away as well?" And Peter said, "Lord, where shall we go? You have the words of life." Now, if Jesus has the words of life, and we are learning to be like him, then we learn to have the words of life too, don't we? We learn to speak the words of life, the words that will build people up, the words that will make a difference. So finally, let's close by turning to Proverbs 15. Proverbs 15. Proverbs 15 and verse 4. Just closing with this one verse. Something to think about. The tongue that brings healing is a tree of life, but a deceitful tongue crushes the spirit. It's so easy as human beings to crush the spirit, to put people down, but we're not in the business of putting people down, tearing people down. We're in the business of building people up, of restoring them, healing them, bringing them life. But the tongue that brings healing is a tree of life. Your tongue, my tongue, our tongues can bring healing to people out there and be a tree of life. So let's begin to speak those words of life wherever we are.